You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Nathan Zagura and, of course, Matt Wilhelm here. Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford, hour number two. We're going to go to Brian Westbrook in just a second, but this in from Steelers practice. Ben Roethlisberger at home with an illness, sent home today, unable to practice. It's only Wednesday, though. I assume he'll be fine for Sunday.
Not a big deal. And if it's they take that precaution not because of the severity. They take the precaution because, you know, given 24 to 36 hours of rest, of absolutely nothing and at home and comfortable, they expect him to practice at his best on Friday, fully recovered, and get ready.
All right, let's go to the Ohio Business Machines hotline and bring in a fine man, a horse enthusiast, and one of the greatest running backs to ever play the game, my pal, Brian Westbrook. B. West, what's up, brother?
Nathan, what's going on, buddy? How's everything, man?
Everything is good. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, Happy Holidays to you and your little girl, Bria. Hope you guys are doing great. How's everything going with you?
Everything is great, man. She's doing well. Too many presents all over the place, but that's what Christmas is all about. Happy Holidays to you and your family as well.
Appreciate it, man. So I got to ask you, yesterday, the only thing that came to mind was Fuddruckers when I heard the Chip Kelly news. What happened? What happened? What are you hearing in Philly?
Well, you know what? I think a lot of times these situations are never just one thing, but a combination of a lot of different things. And I think for Chip Kelly, that's exactly the case. When you look at it, Jeffrey Lurie gave him all the power last year.
Yep.
And let's back up a little bit. When Chip Kelly came into the league, came to the Eagles, he had a lot of very good personnel on that team. You had Macklin, you had McCoy, you had Jackson, you had
Yep.
Bowles, you had Mathis. And these are all Pro Bowl types of players.
Yep.
And Chip Kelly made the decision that he would rather play without those guys and search out for a particular type of culture rather than coach those guys that are on his football team. With those guys on the team, he won 20 games in his first 2 years. I mean, they were a very good football team that really only needed a few tweaks. But instead, systematically, Chip Kelly just got rid of guy after guy after guy.
Yeah.
And in the end, it cost him his job. That's one of the things. The other part of coaching, and there's a few parts of coaching that I think Chip Kelly failed. So he failed on the GM side of things with all the players. The other side of coaching is being able to motivate your guys, get them ready for a football game. And to be able to do that, you're going to need to have the relationship, a personal relationship with your guys. And I don't think Chip Kelly did very good with that either. In fact, many players said they had no relationship with Chip Kelly. He would see him in the hallway, pass right by them, not speak to them. And I think sooner or later, that just grinds on guys. And that's okay to do when you're winning 10 games a year and you're winning championships and things like that. But when you start losing and now you're 6-9 instead of 10-6 with a season, that starts to look bad, and that kind of changes an owner's view. And I think lastly, I think Jeffrey Lurie, the owner, did not like the way that the organization was going. We talked about where the players were at and the type of players that they had when Chip first got there. And now Jeffrey Lurie looks in that locker room and you're saying, okay, we don't have any playmakers. We don't have any difference makers on our team. And those are the reasons why Chip Kelly is out of there.
And Brian, so the Jeffrey Lurie, I watched his press conference earlier today. I thought he did a great job laying out that he was fired on Tuesday evening, which allowed the Philadelphia Eagles to get a head start on the coaching search. It allows Chip Kelly to start his search. And then also his ability to dive into the locker room and get the pros and cons from a guy like Chip Kelly and really understand what the locker room is looking for in their next head coach. So that all being said, what names immediately have popped up in the Philadelphia media as links to the Philadelphia Eagle head coaching vacancy? The one that I've heard is Sean McDermott, defensive coordinator for the Carolina Panthers. So who else is out there and readily available to coach the Eagles?
Yeah, Sean McDermott, obviously he has a past here. Being under Jim Johnson here for quite some time, and he was a defensive coordinator for some time here as well. So he definitely is a candidate. I've heard names like Adam Gase come up. I think big-time wishes like Bill Cowher and John Gruden have been mentioned. I think Jeffrey Lurie and his brain trust, they're going to do all that they can to figure out who's going to be the best coach. Of course, they're going to probably try to get someone that has had NFL experience, unlike Chip Kelly, Generally, in these situations, you go to the complete opposite of the type of coach that you had previously. Meaning, if you had a player coach, you go to a disciplinary and vice versa. We'll see what Jeffrey Lurie and that brain trust come up with. But I know that they're going to do an extensive search, and I also know that they're going to try to find a coach that can deal with the guys that they have in the locker room. And that's one of the reasons that Jeffrey Lurie wants to talk to the guys in the locker room before he begins that search.
BYC, and speaking of the guys in the locker room or former guys in the locker room, I know you talked to a lot of those players. Overall, were they happy to see Chip Kelly go? What's been the reaction there?
You know, I don't know that they were happy, and I don't think a lot of the guys would express that. But I just think a lot of the guys were rubbed the wrong way by Chip Kelly. And, of course, every coach has his guys in his locker room, and then he has the guys that just they're not feeling Chip as a coach. And so I think a lot of the guys were rubbed the wrong way. Of course, that happens a lot when you are losing and you have a losing season, so that could play a part in it as well. But I think for the most part, the college type of theme that Chip Kelly had worked for a little bit there, but then it kind of rubbed a lot of the guys the wrong way.
Have you talked to LeSean McCoy since this has happened?
You know, I haven't talked to LeSean, but I got an idea of how he would feel. I think he'll be smiling and clapping and doing cartwheels and all that other stuff too, but I have not talked to him.
B. West, I know you keep your kind of pulse on the whole NFL. Not only are you an Eagles analyst, you're still dabbling in the fantasy football game, bringing great stuff there. When you look at this Browns team, what have you thought of Johnny Manziel in his second season?
Well, you know, you see some good things, and this is really young quarterbacks across the league. You see some good things and some good plays, and those are the things that you want to increase and improve upon and see more of. Then you see an awful lot of bad decisions, bad plays where you have to anticipate what a defense is doing, and that goes to film study. You have to understand how teams are going to defend you. That goes to coaching and film study. And I think that he could do a much better job of preparing himself. And once he's prepared, he can also get the guys around him prepared and help them out a little bit and make sure that they're ready for every circumstance that a defense can throw at them. I think if he starts to do that, he can do a little bit better. But, you know, listen, you have to put some weapons around the guy too.
Yep.
And so I think maybe when you get some more weapons around him, you give him a whole offseason as a starter or whatever they decide to do out there in Cleveland, then he'll probably be a much better player at that point.
Brian, one weapon that the Cleveland Browns sought out in free agency this year is Dwayne Bowe. You know, gave him $9 million in guaranteed money. And I'm just asking you, as a former NFL veteran, have you ever come in contact with a situation with what Cleveland's been dealing with? You give a guy a whole bunch of money, and he's essentially been a healthy scratch a majority of the year after missing just a few weeks of training camp and really having no role, and yet no one can really explain why he's not even in uniform or an active participant, you know, on each and every Sunday as a playmaker for Johnny Manziel.
You know, it's weird because I watched Dwayne Bowe out in Kansas City, and it looked like he got a little bit worse every single year. And I was hoping that going to Cleveland would give him a fresh start, and it just doesn't appear that it has. And I'm thinking, I saw him in college, and he was a productive player, a bigger receiver that can use his body to get open. Unfortunately for him, things have not turned out too good. And part of that, in my opinion, is that in the NFL, you have to get better every single year. You just can't be good your first year, then the next year you're not getting better. And for him not to be able to play on a team that we're talking about doesn't have a lot of weapons, that speaks volumes to his work ethic, that speaks volumes to the type of player that he is. I don't know Dwayne Bowe personally, but what I do know is that if he was going to help the team and could help the team win, he would be out there on the field. Unfortunately, the coaches don't feel that way.
They clearly do not. We're talking with Brian Westbrook, Eagles great, about what happened with Chip Kelly. And, of course, this team. Now, BYS, the Browns early in the year, not a lot of running of the football the last couple of weeks, though. Isaiah Crowell has gotten going a little bit, and I know you liked his game the last few weeks. I know the 49ers game was a big one. This one against Kansas City, he had a good game as well. Why do you think it's making him more effective of late? And do you still think he's the kind of guy that it could be, you know, a bell cow back for you in the future?
Well, I think he can. I mean, the things that I like about his game is that he's quick. He makes good decisions, quick decisions, and he's decisive when he runs. He has a little wiggle there, and I think that helps him out a whole lot, especially in situations when plays are just not blocked the best. You know, any young running back, quickness is going to help you. Being able to make something out of nothing is definitely going to help you. His vision definitely helps him. And all those things make and combine to make a very good running back. And I think he's done, Crowell has done a great job of that, especially on a team that hasn't had a lot of success around him. I think he's done a pretty good job of that.
Now, the one guy that I've heard on our team compared, and they're trying to, you know, build him up a little bit to you by former Eagles great himself, Wilbert Montgomery, our running backs coach, Duke Johnson, a guy very effective out of the backfield, set a record for receptions by a Browns rookie running back, owns the franchise record there. What do you see from Duke, and is he kind of the, you know, bringing along, carrying it from your mold as the kind of guys that can do it all out of the backfield as the NFL continues to evolve to a more passing league?
Well, you're right. The NFL is evolving to a passing league where they're going to throw the ball an awful lot. And so anytime that you have a back that can create mismatches out of the backfield, and that was one of the things that I always tried to do, and Andy Reid always tried to put me in a situation where I could create a mismatch, meaning I could get on a safety or a linebacker, and then I could use my elusiveness, my quickness, to be able to work myself open. And the thing that I think would help Duke Johnson out there is having a quarterback, having a little bit more confidence in him and being able to find him a little bit better. Probably some pressure there and some pocket protection would help him a little bit as far as Manziel and being able to get the ball out to him. But I think he's done a great job of running routes, winning on routes, and over time your quarterback will continue to build that confidence in him as a route runner. And I think he's still, you know, I still think he has some growing to do, but I still think he could be a very good route runner out of the backfield and a very good running back running the football as well.
Brian, the NFL playoffs are right around the corner and just a few spots still up for grabs. Who do you see making their way to represent both the AFC and NFC champions and then on obviously out there to San Francisco and the Bay Area for the Super Bowl?
Oh, man, it's tough. You know, when I look at the NFC, I just love the way that the Cardinals are playing.
Yeah.
I mean, they have an aggressive attacking defense that wants to get after you at every turn. They're blitzing all over the place. A big loss of the Honey Badgers, you know, him back there in the secondary, but they still have it, Patrick Peterson in the secondary. I still think they can do some things defensively. And then when you look at their offense, you're talking about an aggressive offense. They're aggressive on the defensive side of the ball, but they're also aggressive on the offensive side of the ball. They're able to attack down the field with Carson Palmer and those three receivers that they have out there, Brown, Floyd, and Fitzgerald. And then you bring in David Johnson.
How about that kid, huh?
Yeah,
David,
man,
Johnson.
You're talking about a team that just has weapons all over the place. It's a great thing for an offensive coordinator as well as a quarterback. And so I love the way that they're playing in the NFC. And then the AFC is a little bit more difficult for me because I want to go with the Broncos. I love the way that they've been playing. But I'm not 100% sold on Brock Osweiler at this point.
Me neither.
And I love the Patriots, but the same thing. They have some injuries, and I'm not sure that they're able to produce enough offense to get them to the Super Bowl. You know, I would love to see Pittsburgh get in and be able to make some hay in the playoffs, though.
So do you think that the Bills can knock the Jets off? Rex Ryan, you know this is – I mean, he's got to be salivating at the opportunity to knock the Jets out of the playoffs.
Well, they are absolutely right. You're right. I think they definitely want to try to do that. But the Jets have been playing some good football. Fitzpatrick has been able to get the ball out of his hands. Bilal Powell has looked like a new man.
Yeah.
He's been able to run the ball up and down the field. I love the way that Brandon Marshall, that connection with the quarterback, him, Decker, that connection with Fitzpatrick, they always look good. And that attacking defense that Todd Bowles has put together looks good as well. And so they're another team. If they can get in, not a lot of teams will want to face those guys.
No, I agree with you. And I just saw a stat today. Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker have caught touchdowns in 8 games this year. Same game. They both caught a touchdown in 8 games. That broke the record that was previously held from the 1998 Minnesota Vikings of Randy Moss and Chris Carter. So that's actually pretty impressive when you think about it.
That's great company to be in right there.
It is very good company to be in. I remember when my man Jeff George made his way to those Minnesota Vikings and was chucking the ball with Randy Moss and
just
Chris
throw
Carter.
Throw it deep. Let him go get it.
Exactly. Throw deep. Let him go get it. Well, B-West, always appreciate the time. Always a pleasure talking with you, and hopefully I'll see you soon, brother.
Sounds good, brother. Take care now.
All right, man. The great Brian Westbrook with us here. When we come back, we're going to go back to phone lines, 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850. Then at 2:30, we're going to hear Jim Brown sound from the herd yesterday talking about Johnny Manziel. So a lot to get to here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl. Marie, you can call us at 216-578-0850. Of course, 216-578-0850. Today, Mike Tomlin addressed the media talking about the Browns and obviously gives them a lot of credit for how hard that they have played this season, et cetera. So I thought that was interesting to see. Is that just something coaches do? They just come out and they did
but,
a
but
lot
I
of
also,
praise.
I read the Mike Tomlin transcript, and to me it comes across like Mike Tomlin gives two craps about what the Browns are doing. He says he doesn't know Mike Pettine that well. He's not into evaluating Johnny Manziel. He didn't even really know that Manziel had concussion-like symptoms. It doesn't matter who plays. It's all about him, his guys, having a plan ready for them to win a Week 17 football game and be in the right spot if it happens to, you know, if the Jets happen to lose.
Absolutely. And I thought the most interesting thing that came out of his press conference for me was when he was talking about what happened with the Baltimore Ravens game. He said, quite frankly, Baltimore possessed the ball. Time of possession was a big element, and then we turned it over. Two turnovers on the game. We had to turn over on downs on the field on a 4th-and-1 attempt. I think all those things collectively created a climate that produced the output you saw last Sunday. If you're the Browns, you want to have like 3 20-play drives and just keep Ben Roethlisberger off the
field.
You can't do that very easily, but that's what you want to do.
Of course. Of course. And how do you do that? I think the recipe has been set. You want to run the football. You want to convert on third down above 50%, and you have the opportunity. You have the opportunity to be in a conversation in the fourth quarter to potentially win the game. But ultimately, as we've seen, the lack of scoring for the Cleveland Browns has been the demise.
And I don't think
of them winning and losing.
And I don't think you can expect the Steelers to have another game like they just had. You need to be able to go out there and, as you said, score points. And that's something that the Cleveland Browns have struggled to do. Now, the few times that they were able to do so with Johnny Manziel, they have won when he's produced multiple touchdowns. I saw an interesting stat as I was going through and preparing. You know, I do all my little stat things. In Isaiah Crowell's – how many games this year do you think Isaiah Crowell has scored – I mean, Isaiah Crowell has rushed the ball 15 times or more?
Three times, okay.
They're 2-1. Tennessee – San Francisco, and then this past week. In all three, in those three games, he's rushed for 305 yards and 4 touchdowns. In the other 12 games combined, he's rushed for 348 yards. Like, this is a guy that clearly does better with a bigger volume, a bigger workload. If he's gotten to 15 carries, he's given you at least 5 yards a carry. Give him the football.
Yeah.
Find a way to give him the football.
And I think a lot of that is predicated by what our defense can limit other teams to do. Because when our defense limits another team, I think John DeFilippo settles in, gets patient, and can run the football with confidence. When we get behind the eight ball, down 10, down 7 quick, you feel like we got to throw our way into this football game, and you deviate from the run game.
Absolutely, and this is going to be an important one. Last time the Browns faced the Steelers, the Browns running backs had 10 carries for 5 yards combined as a group. The Browns are going to have to be able to run the football, especially if it's Johnny or Austin Davis. I really don't think it matters. I think the onus on creating some balance is going to be huge for both of these guys. Austin Davis not as likely to be able to make plays with his legs against this Pittsburgh Steelers team, so you're going to need to have kind of more of a traditional offense, straightforward, getting it done.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. Shorten this football game, force a turnover, you know, steal a possession as we did, you know, via the punt fake. And now Pittsburgh's got to prepare for that again, because for a team like Cleveland with nothing to lose, ruin Pittsburgh's season. Have them watching from the same spot
you are
for the rest of the teams playing in the playoffs.
Yeah, that's what you want to do. Let's go to the phone lines. Mike in Cincinnati. Mike, addressing our Ohio business machine hot topic of, has Johnny shown you enough that you don't feel the need to draft a quarterback next year?
Hey, guys. I am of the opposite belief. I believe that if you have a top three pick in this draft, you cannot pass on a top quarterback prospect. Even if you like Johnny and you want to bring him back and let him compete, I personally don't. I personally don't like watching his game. I don't think it's how you win consistently going forward in the NFL. I thought the more he runs around, the more he's going to get hurt, and he ran for over 100 yards last week, and lo and behold, he's got a concussion. I think you can't. I'll jump off a building if they have a top quarterback prospect sitting there in front of them at the top of the draft, and they pass on him.
I think if I'm with you, if there's a quarterback that they feel is that good, I think you got to go with him. And right now, the guy I've said all along, the guy that I've liked the best, and I'm going to get into my big study here once we get into the offseason, but the guy that I've liked the best thus far, and I think I will continue to like the best, is going to be Jared Goff. That's why I liked out of Cal. Paxton Lynch, by the way, struggling today. Apparently looks tight.
Struggling.
He's had a lot of games where he's struggled. I think that Jared Goff just does things like a pro, and I love that he had his down weeks. He had a couple rough games and really bounced back from those and has finished his season on a very, very high note. He moves like a pro. Everything he does looks NFL ready.
So, I listened to the really big show with Bruce Hooley and Dino this morning, and I caught some great segments, and they talked about the best situation, or actually – you know, what has led to some of the demise of the quarterbacks that have been drafted here is you draft them, you put them on the field immediately. And they play, they struggle, there's no growth. And I think, you know, Bruce made a great point about drafting a guy, giving him an opportunity to learn the game. You know, if you look at Aaron Rodgers, you look at Brock Osweiler, you look at Philip Rivers sat a year, you know, and learned behind Drew Brees, who happens to be, I think, third in all-time passing in the National Football League, maybe fifth, fourth, whatever it is. Is that best, or is throwing him in the fire the way Derek Carr got thrown in the fire, the way Teddy Bridgewater got thrown in the fire? Well, actually, Teddy Bridgewater didn't get thrown in the fire. I mean, he kind of started as the season, you know, kind of lingered on for the Vikings, but added a spark towards the end of the year. Blake Bortles, you know, didn't start the year, but then thrown in the fire very early. If the Cleveland Browns can add the right weapons, I think a young quarterback, you go out there and let him get his bumps and bruises with his guys that when they get it, will fire very well.
Yeah, especially if, like, Josh Gordon is back, and that's basically like getting a first-round wide receiver.
Correct.
Better than a first-round wide receiver.
Right, so. Dino, who was Hooley interviewing? The Northeast Ohio guy. Doug LaMaurice was the guy. And he just made a point that the Cleveland Browns, you know, beyond Tim Couch taking him number one overall in 99, they've taken a shot on a first-round guy on every position since, but quarterback. Offensive lineman, running back, tight end, wide receiver, DB, you know. But they've never circled back around and made, you know, taking a guy and giving him an opportunity to develop and be your guy, you know, early in the first round ever since Tim Couch.
Right.
So this is your opportunity if you're going to pick first or second overall.
This is your chance, and I think that, you know, you got to evaluate it, and you got to give a lot of look to these quarterbacks and see what you got. Andre in San Diego. Andre, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. I finally got to see the Cavs in person in the LeBron era other night in Phoenix, so that was pretty good. And
awesome.
Buckeye Nation and Cav Nation was well represented out there.
Good.
Yeah, about the Johnny, I've seen enough Johnny. Yeah, I know it's not his fault that he got a concussion, but he's like a drama queen. I've had enough. I want clean house. I want Farmer gone. I want Pettin gone. I want a new quarter. I want to start over. I don't mind starting over. Nothing wrong with starting over. I mean, if you pick the wrong mate, you're just going to stay there because you just want to be consistent. No, I mean, consistency is good if it's good. If it's bad, I don't want bad consistency. So I want a whole new thing. I've had enough of Johnny, and I want to start from zero with a new quarterback.
Well, thank you for your call. And I think, you know, look at the Philadelphia Eagles, for example. Your owner, after 10-6, 10-6, and 6-9, and I know they had issues, you know, coach-player issues that, you know, Brian Westbrook addressed that has been very, you know, Sal Palantonio has addressed multiple times as he reports from Philadelphia that it's beyond just winning and losing. But as I mentioned when we were talking, when you brought this up, is 10-6, 10-6, and 6-9, or potentially 7-9, I mean, a Cleveland fan base would die for those results.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But yet, an owner of a franchise sees those results and the trend of where they're going as not good enough and would take the opportunity to start anew and go get a guy that fits, that will have them trending in the right direction, that fits who the Philadelphia Eagles are and where Jeffrey Lurie and the Philadelphia Eagles should be going. And that's why when you look around the hot seats in the National Football League, you know, you can look at the Colts.
Yep.
Is Chuck Pagano trending them in the right direction? You know, is Jim Irsay going to get, you know, he's getting very impatient, not competing for Super Bowls with his prized possession in Andrew Luck as he's about to make history and pay him more money than anyone's ever received in the game.
Yeah, and I think there's a good chance we're going to see quite a few coaching vacancies open up here after this season, and I think the Colts certainly be a prime candidate. One day you've heard a lot of Johnny Manziel. Again, the latest, he may or may not have a concussion. We don't know yet. The team is expected to find that out later today. We will share that with you whenever we are able to share that with you, whether it be today or it is tomorrow. When we come back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford, we are going to hear from Jim Brown, the greatest of all time, talking about Johnny Manziel. He's on The Herd with Colin Cowherd, and we will hear his thoughts on Johnny right after this.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Nathan Skura, Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl in Berea. And yesterday, Jim Brown was on The Herd with Jason Whitlock and was talking about Johnny Manziel and had what I think are a lot of interesting things to say, talking about coaching that can make Johnny Manziel better because Jim Brown believes he's got the tools.
The coaching can really bring it out because when you get a running quarterback that can really run, then you teach him how to run, when to run. And that becomes an extra problem for the defense because they don't like quarterbacks that scramble and get out of the pocket and are able to run the ball. So this guy has all of that, and he can throw the ball.
So Jim Brown is saying, question was asked, are you for Johnny or against Johnny, Jim?
I say certain things to him walking in and out of the locker room that he understands. I say, hey, Johnny, I'm for you, man. I believe you can do it. I'm for you. And I'm for him because I think he has the talent.
That is Johnny Manziel's, I guess, biggest advocate in Jim Brown. He believes he's got the talent. He believes in him. That it's got to be great for Johnny Manziel to have a guy like Jim Brown reach out to him that way. When he talks about Johnny Manziel in the limelight and the publicity, here's what he had to say.
I think the publicity is something that he's got to get used to because he's one of those guys that attract tremendous attention from the fans and the public. You know, and he just was a college player. He did nothing in the pros so far. But the talent is there.
Clearly he believes in the talent. He's mentioned that in all of these clips. And finally, this one I thought was great from Jim Brown when asked if he knows about players who don't like to party.
The things that have been reported on him are things that he can clean up and will clean up. Don't say party because I don't know a player that don't like to party.
A little chuckle at the end there from Jim Brown. Yes, I think partying is prevalent. And as I've said with the latest video that came out on Johnny Manziel, he was doing it in his house, which is exactly what you would have wanted him to do. You would want Johnny Manziel to do that, and I think he did a great job with that. And certainly I was happy to see that. And that video bothered me not at all, not one little bit as it relates to Johnny Manziel. So interesting there with Jim Brown. Certainly being an advocate for Johnny, he believes in the talent, and Jim Brown certainly knows a thing or two about talent. I don't know if he knows, you know, what it is to be a quarterback in the NFL, but he certainly knows talented players and what it's like to have that kind of pressure on him, which certainly Johnny Manziel does. That's something that Jim Brown certainly can relate to. 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850. It is Cleveland Browns Daily. It is, of course, driven by Liberty Ford. Also, you can get your questions in for the mailbag. Use the hashtag AskCBD, and we'll get those questions with our producer, Matt Fontana, in our final segment here today. For those of you just joining, the big news out of Berea today, twofold. Number one, Tremont Williams does have a concussion,
And he will is not expected to play. Not he will not play, but is not expected to be able to play against the Pittsburgh Steelers. That means when you're going against the best passing offense in the NFL, you'll have Justin Gilbert, you'll have Pierre Desir, you'll have Charles Gaines, Kaywan Williams, young corners who will all be tested very, very much so by Ben Roethlisberger, Martavis Bryant, Antonio Brown, and Marcus Wheaton. It certainly will be a challenge, I think, for those guys this weekend. And maybe we'll get to find out a little bit about them. Can Charles Gaines bounce back from a very rough outing against the Steelers? Really, the last time we saw Pierre Desir was in that game against the Steelers. How can they handle these guys? I think the Browns are going to have to give a lot more safety help over the top in this game than they did the first time around, because without it, Ben Roethlisberger is going to be able to kill them on those vertical routes, and that was a huge, huge problem for the Cleveland Browns the first time around. It was basically go deep, go deep, go deep, and that's what they were able to do play after play, and they roasted the Browns on those vertical throws. They think they picked up 3 touchdowns through the air, and in addition to that, they picked up another 3 or 4 pass interference penalties that were big plays. This is a game where the Browns are going to have to grind it out. It's been tough to run the football on the Steelers, but it had been tough to run it on the Kansas City Chiefs, and the Browns came out and they did just that. This is a game where they're going to have to run it, control the football, take a page out of the book of the Ravens. The Ravens last week ran for 127 yards and a touchdown against the Steelers. They controlled the time of possession in that game. That's going to be the key for the Browns. If they're going to have any chance, whether it's Johnny Manziel, whether it is Austin Davis at quarterback, whether Terrell Pryor's got to come in and play quarterback, none of that matters as much as the Browns' ability to control the clock, control the time of possession, find a way to go out there and take care of business from that standpoint. Because if they can do that, then they're going to have an opportunity to shorten the game. You put yourself in a position where, hey, maybe it's one mistake here or one mistake there that allows you to win. But going back to that game last time, Ben Roethlisberger on passes of more than 20 yards in the air was 4 of 6 for 168 yards and a touchdown against the Browns in that game. And not only that, he had another 3 pass interference penalties that added up to over 80 yards. So about 260 yards on those vertical passes. The Browns have got to do a better job of trying to slow that down if they want to have any chance of defeating the Steelers in that one. All right, what we're going to do now is we're going to take our final break. When we come back, we'll bring in our producer, Matt Fontana. We'll get into the mailbag. Plus, it's your last opportunity if you want to call up and ask a question live, 216-578-0850. Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Nathan Zgura, Matt Wilhelm. We're going to wrap things up here. Your last opportunity to call us up, 216-578-0850 here on this Tuesday. And it also time to go ahead and bring in our producer, Matt Fontana, for a little Cleveland Browns Daily mailbag. Matt, how you doing, brother?
Good. How are you guys?
Excellent.
Good,
man.
Awesome.
Excellent.
Again, you guys can, if anyone has any questions on Twitter, again, 216-578-0850, or you could tweet at Browns_daily. We'll start this one from Jay Webb. Says, guys, if Pettine is back next year, do you think he would be willing to change the atmosphere with the player day off and overhaul the defensive scheme?
Well, I think when you've been this bad for so long, and I mean, you know, losing 17 of 20, and the way I say it, there's a kink in the hose. You know, and if you want to point fingers, you got to point some at yourself. You got to point some at the players. And then you have to make those changes. Go get the players that fit your system or change the system. And then you have to change your process. You know, how you address the players, the severity, a discipline, that you, accountability you hold them to, what your expectations are of the players. When would I expect you to be in the building? When do I expect you to be here? What should you be doing, you know, on and off the field to represent this organization? So, yes, I would think that if Mike Pettine has retained, his process and even some of his coaches on the staff are going to be changed, because 3 and whatever we are is not satisfactory.
Yeah, I think that if it was here, it would be. There would have to be massive overhaul, I expect, on the defensive side of the football. I think you'd have to reevaluate your process in terms of if it is, you know, hard enough for these players, if you're demanding enough of the players, if you're a training camp. I think you'd probably have to go back and look at how training camp was and how that went, if that was too, well, I don't know if lax is the right word, but you're a player, you've seen it, and I know you felt that that was a training camp that was not hard enough, if that's the right
word. It wasn't training camp. It's your one opportunity to grind and learn and overcome and to get the most out of your players, or for them to show you the most and evaluate. And it was, you know, a jog through, a day off. You know, you never, I mean, how many, I bet you we could count on two hands. So less than 10 or less, the number of times that the 11 that started week one and the 11 on offense that were together on the practice field. More than two practices in a row.
Yeah, so many days off, and we've even seen it in the season. A lot of days off, a lot of victory Mondays that didn't necessarily follow victories for this team. And I think that everything would have to be reevaluated.
That's unheard of.
I know you as a player have found it to be very, very surprising.
It is. It is. And all those things need to be shored up. And if, for God's sakes, if Mike Pettine wants to have a conversation with me, I'd be happy to have it.
You played in the league a long
winning
time.
Winning cultures, you know, holding guys accountable to being a professional. How do you do it? Here's what we did.
Yeah.
Here's what coaches did. And I think in some cases, there's a lot of figuring out. I'm sure young coaches, you know, go through their own trials and errors. You know, there were things that I'm sure Mike Pettine adapted from Rex Ryan, from John Harbaugh, that he did that worked in that system. But you had guys like Ray Lewis making sure that everybody was on time and practiced when you practiced 100 miles an hour and would call a guy out for getting a day off too many consecutive Wednesdays in a row.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we're resting guys to have them ready for a Sunday, and then they don't play that well on Sunday. So what are we resting them for? To have them out there? You're in uniform. Woo! Yay! Come on. Let's go.
Let's go. Leave
practice.
It all out
it's
there.
Part of it. You don't just get paid for the games.
That's correct. And, I mean, I know it's a long season from a football player standpoint, and you get beat up, but, I mean, in the reality of it is...
Long season, short career.
Long season, short career.
Would you rather grind it out for a decade and never have to work again?
Absolutely.
There you go.
Absolutely. All right, what else you got, Matt?
This one's from George, guys. He goes, not counting Mike Pettine because he hopes he's back. How many head coaching vacancies do you think there will be in the NFL this offseason? I'll say include Chip Kelly and the Eagles. No offense to Pat Shurmur.
All right, so we're going to have the...
I just kind of went over this, and ESPN.com right now has like they give a 10 is certain, almost. 10 out of 10 is certain. So they have the Indianapolis Colts, Chuck Pagano being fired. They have Dan Campbell, the interim coach there in Miami, who's taken over after week 5, him being fired. Mike Mularkey not being retained as an interim head coach after Ken Wisenhunt fired in Tennessee. Then Mike Pettine is a 9 out of 10. Jim Caldwell, also a 9 out of 10. Mike McCoy, a 9 out of 10. And Tom Coughlin, an 8 out of 10. And then it drops to 5 out of 10 with Jason Garrett. But as it says, January of 2015, Jason Garrett just signed a five-year, $30 million contract. So Jerry would have to pay out $26 million, $24 million in some type of payout or negotiate a buyout with Jason Garrett, if that's the case.
Yeah, when I look at it, I don't see. So I would see
over under 4.5.
I think. Well, counting Chip Kelly, so that's one. I think if the Bills lose, I think there's a chance that Rex Ryan could be one and done in Buffalo. A chance. I don't think. I think that you're going to see. I don't think Jim Caldwell should go.
Dan Campbell be retained?
I don't think so.
Will Mularkey be retained?
No, that's three. Jim Caldwell, I would think you'd retain
him. Chuck Pagano?
They're 5-2 in their last 7 games, and they're playing good football. They got the right offensive coordinator in there with Jim Bob Cooter. I think Chuck Pagano's in trouble, so that's 4. I don't think that Jason Garrett is in trouble. I don't think
Tom Coughlin?
I don't think Mike Tomlin is in trouble. I think that there could be a new head coach in New Orleans. There could be a new head coach in San Diego. So yep. I think you could say, I think maybe five head coaches, not counting the Cleveland Browns vacancy, if there is a vacancy here, if anything happens with the Browns. I think there could be at least 5.
Very interesting. Are there that many names out there, or is it going to be another wave of coordinators being hired as first-time head coaches?
I don't know. What do you think about, by the way, Tom Coughlin? I mean, Jim Tomsula, he can't be considered safe. I mean, there could be a lot. Maybe it ends up being 8. Maybe a quarter of the league turns over.
Wow.
And then all of a sudden you have serious competition if you want to get one of the guys that you consider to be the prime candidates.
Yep.
Interesting. All right, Matt, what else you got?
This is from the fumble. Again, you can tweet at Browns_daily. He goes, guys, sorry for the draft talk, but if we have a top five pick, what percentages do you think the Browns could possibly trade that pick are?
I would probably put it at 50%, and it just depends on what people want and what the Browns want. You know, if somebody decides that they've got to have Jared Goff or Paxton Lynch, then you probably can move down. Or if somebody falls that somebody really covets, I'd put it at 50%. I think that if it really depends on what you're looking at doing with this team. If you want a quarterback, you're not trading down, most likely. If you think that you're okay going into the season with Johnny, Josh McCown, and Austin Davis, then you're probably trading back, trying to get another asset, and then trying to get one of those wide receivers.
And I heard, again, the same conversation Bruce Hooley was having earlier today. Someone mentioned, you know, Joey Bosa potentially coming here to Cleveland or falling to Cleveland at two if Tennessee doesn't take him at one. And it was as great as Bosa is and as much as he projects to be the next J.J. Watt-ish type of player, it was a great kind of perspective. He just said, if Joey Bosa is drafted by the Cleveland Browns, Joey Bosa will become the Cleveland Joe Thomas. A great, solid, perennial Pro Bowler, you know, along on a bad football team that doesn't win a lot of games.
I think if he could certainly help this team win some football games, if he could help this defense. I think if the defense performed at a good level this year, and that's the thing, I think you got to get, you know, Bosa, they say, projects the best as a 4-3 defensive end. So if you were to pick him, I think that would be just another signal that you are making that switch on the defensive side of the ball. And you might have a whole, if Mike Pettine were to stay, maybe you have a whole new coordinator, you have a whole new defensive system.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't, you know, coaches, is that something that Mike Pettine could do? Could Mike Pettine go away from the defense, the only defense that he has known and coached and been immersed in his entire NFL career?
I think some of the best coaches that I played with, after multiple stops other places, the best coaches were the ones that had adapted to what they learned along their journey that became who they are late in their coaching career. If that makes sense.
Uh-huh.
Norv Turner wasn't a great play caller in he wasn't a great play caller in San Diego because of the weapons we had in San Diego. It's because of what he learned along the journey to become the head coach of the San Diego Chargers. Wade Phillips, you know, was the, you know, water boy when his dad was, you know, bum was, you know, when he was the guy in Houston with Earl Campbell and those great teams, and then finally through trial and error, you know, learned what worked for him.
Son of
Bum. You know, yeah, the way Bum Phillips drew it up and the way Wade Phillips drew it up is totally different. He just adapted a core principles into today's NFL, and they work. And you can see it's very evident. The same thing has worked everywhere he's been.
It has. All right, anything left in there, Matt?
I got one last one for you. This is from Joe, and he asks, this is more for Matt. He goes, Matt, do players kind of take rivalries seriously? As fans, we obviously know the hatred for the Steelers, but do the players on the field realize it?
Yes, but it's not to the extent that you might think. Definitely not to the extent that the fans are. Not to the extent that, you know, rivalries are in college. There's special talk about it, but not to the extent that, it's the resounding message throughout the locker room of what you want to do. But I mean, that being said,
who was yours though? Raiders when you were with the Chiefs?
Raiders with the Chargers.
I mean, the Chargers,
yeah.
Or the Chiefs?
Raiders for sure. Green Bay, obviously, you know, beating the Bears was a big deal.
Sure.
San Francisco was like, not really, because they were just so bad for so long.
Yeah.
That it really wasn't a rivalry. So yeah, but I mean, you knew it was Raider week. It was special.
Interesting. Now they might be sharing a locale, the Raiders and the Chargers, next year. All right. Thank you, everybody, for being with us here on this Wednesday. Tomorrow, we will have the coordinators. Coordinator Thursday, the last one of the year. It'll be the last Cleveland Browns Daily of the year.
Favorite day of the week.
I know. It'll be glorious. The kid will be with us. We'll make our NFL picks. I picked up a game on him. I'm only two down. Two down with 1 week to go. Let's go. Giddy up. Thanks for listening. For Matt Fontana, Matt Wilhelm, Brian Westbrook, I'm Nathan Zgura saying thanks for listening to Cleveland Browns Daily.
Driven by Liberty Ford.
The preceding program was a production of the Cleveland Browns and a part of the Browns Media Network.